Hello, this is DDM. Welcome to another episode of Secretary of Shade on WYPR. Today, we have an episode that people have been asking for 4 months. I have been talking about it, hinting at it on the YouTube channel. We're going to be talking about Project 2025 today. For those of you just joining the channel, my name is DDM once again. You can follow me online at Dapper Dan Midas, as well as the YouTube channel for Secretary of Shade, youtube.com/Secretary of Shade, as well as our TikTok. TikTok, just type in Secretary of Shade, and you should be able to find us there. Now, Project 2025. There has been a lot of discussion about it as of late. Of course, the Democratic Party is using that as one of their chief weapons in their arsenals against the Republican Party in this election cycle. And it has a lot of people terrified. Folks are scared. Folks are nervous. You have some folks downplaying it. You have even, you know, former president, current presidential nominee for the Republican Party, Donald Trump, saying he don't have anything to do with it. All right. Even though a lot of the folks who have written policy and passages or whatever you want to call it for Project 2025 worked in his administration. Okay. I.e. Ben Carson. Got a funny story about him. But let's take a look at it, right? So Project 2025, which is sponsored, written, spearheaded by the Heritage Foundation. You may say, DDM, what is the Heritage Foundation? The Heritage Foundation is a think tank, okay? It's a conservative think tank. They come up with policies, agendas, things that they want to cover, they want to see into legislation on a more conservative side. It is based in Washington, D.C., which is interesting. Founded in 1973, really started getting its legs in the 80s during the Reagan administration. At that time, they do a lot with shaping public policy. They have a lot of big wigs on their board of trustees that contribute to the Heritage Foundation. Now, what's interesting about this company or this organization is it's a 501c3, so it's a nonprofit. Now, with them being a nonprofit, based on that classification, they're not required to disclose their donors and donations under current laws that guide tax-deductible organizations. So they don't have to disclose who's giving them money. Smart cookies, okay? Now, the funny thing is, you know, this is the age of the internet where everything is readily available. And if you dig deep enough, you will find the information. So just a few of the trustees on that have contributed to the Heritage Foundation. You have people affiliated with Chase Manhattan Bank, General Motors, Mobile, Pfizer, Sears, okay? Just a few, okay? And what I found interesting, I was researching this, in the 80s, they also allegedly, from what I've seen, received about $2 million, a $2 million donation from South Korea's National Intelligence Service. Gagged when I saw that, okay? Now, these are people, obviously, who are big wigs, big business, big corporations who are a part of this organization and ultimately helping steer a policy. And this is one of those things where when you think about what Bernie Sanders says about big businesses should not be able to influence elections, or it should be a cap and things like that on what big businesses can do. When I did my research on the Heritage Foundation, I totally get that now when you see who's involved with this foundation. And this isn't even the first time that they've done something like this or tried to draft this type of a game plan or legislation. They've done this since they've been around. Like I said, it started primarily during the Reagan era. There's even traces of it during the Nixon era, actually. But this is the first time, because of where we are in society and with technology, where it's been pushed to center stage. Now, with the recent iteration of this, this policy, these plans, whatever, this scheme, whatever you want to call it, this all actually started. Project 2025, the Heritage Foundation kicked this off for all intents and purposes due to the Trump presidency being a mess behind the scenes, due to a lot of reasons. So what happened is, and this is from an article in ProPublica that I read, which was really good. You should check it out, by the way. Around January 2023, about 15 people gathered for 3 days at the Heritage Foundation in Washington to talk about a few things that they wanted to see implemented with the next political candidate for president, who was a Republican, right? They wanted to kind of have more structure. They wanted to make sure that things were more tight so that they can pass legislation a lot more easier. So it was intended to assist the 2024 Republican nominee, whoever that would be, because at the time when they started this, they didn't really know who it was going to be, but we all knew it was going to be Donald Trump. The people in that 15 included former members of the Trump administration, and it was geared to address what was perceived as a shortcoming of the Trump White House, that presidency. They failed to fill a lot of the key government positions with Trump loyalists. So it wasn't that all of them weren't necessarily filled, but it wasn't people who were loyal to Trump, okay? A lot of people, because we remember back then, didn't expect Trump to win in 2016. So a lot of hiring had been left to a lot of the Republican veterans who had been in politics in Washington for so long to fill a lot of the slots. They don't want this to happen again. They want a fully ready staff and people who are going to be loyal to Trump and loyal to those agendas to push them through. So that's how this all started. Long story short, it started because the Republican Party under Trump in the White House was a damn mess. That's the long and the short of it, okay? So one thing I got to give them, though, is that they learned. They took the note. So these people are not dumb by any means. They may be viewed as extreme to some, but they're definitely not stupid. Now, the director of Project 2025, this is the man who spearheaded all of this, got people in rooms, got it together, put it together, is a man by the name of Paul Dans. Now, Mr. Dans has since stepped down from the Heritage Foundation. He stepped down actually this year around July, August, sometime around there. I mean, Project 2025 is already done. So, I mean, that's a trivial move, but I digress. He stepped down. Now, what broke my heart when I was researching Paul Dans, the director, the what a lot of people are calling the mastermind behind getting Project 2025 together. He's raised in Baltimore. He's a Baltimorean. And as a native Baltimorean, that kind of broke my heart. It really did. A lot. And so just a little background on Paul Dance. Paul Dance raised in the 70s, 80s, and his family, interesting, was very liberal. Peter Dance, his father was a professor of medicine who had enlisted in the public health service and also worked at Johns Hopkins School of Medicine, started an STD clinic and a migrant health clinic while on faculty at the University of Colorado, served in the office of Senator Gaylord Nelson, the Wisconsin Democrat who founded Earth Day. His mother, Paul Dance's mother, Colette, was a French teacher who had previously worked as a chemist at the National Institutes of Health. The family lived in north of Baltimore. Him and his brother, he has a twin brother, went to Delaney High School. For those of us in the region, went to Delaney High, played sports. He was on a debate team, by all accounts, very bright kids. I'm trying to figure out, how does a man raised in a family like this arrive at the destination that he's at? And it really, when I looked into his background, because, you know, they're doing a lot of stories on him that you have to dig for some of them. But it seems like he was a person who grew up in a lot of liberal environments, even his early schooling at MIT. You know, he went to MIT, went to law school in Virginia, I believe. Like, he was birthed in a liberal system. And so a person that's birthed in a liberal system becomes this, essentially a Sith Lord. You know? Like, how do you go to the dark side of the Force? How does this happen, right? And he studied at MIT. He got his master's in city planning. His thesis was on the redevelopment of industrial parks like the Brooklyn Navy Yard, okay? At the University of Virginia School of Law, he was, studying law, of course. But outside of that, he joined the campus branch of the Federalist Society, the conservative network founded by law students at Yale and the University of Chicago in the 80s. And he rose to become the chapter president. This is Anakin Skywalker. But all, like, this is literally Anakin Skywalker. Now, in his bio, I'm just going to read his bio, and this is his bio. This is not something that somebody wrote from the Republican National Lawyers Association. So he says, and this is in first person, by the way, I am a graduate of the University of Virginia School of Law and received both my undergraduate and master's degrees from the Massachusetts Institute of Technology. I served in the Trump administration as chief of staff and White House liaison at the Office of Personnel Management and also as a senior advisor in the Office of Community Planning and Development at the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development. He worked in HR, translation. Okay, so this is a man who essentially worked in HR on a government level, which now makes sense why Project 2025 was so detailed, so mapped out. And even when you look at, when I looked at how he put this together, like, he even wanted to create a database that cost roughly around $2 million that was kind of like a more conservative version of LinkedIn that would house all Republican Trump loyalists, all MAGA loyalists. And he had a meeting for this. Like, people have reported there was a meeting, there was a slideshow, a PowerPoint, handwritten drawings. It was a whole thing, right? So this is a person who is very well versed in how to create policy. And it goes back to the thing, like, nobody ever likes HR. And now I, like, this is a case of why. We never like HR. Nobody likes HR. Okay? HR can literally make your life a living hell. And I also, what was interesting, and I don't want to sound like a creep, but in my research, I did a lot of digging. I found his information on the Florida bar Association website, and it actually still had his phone number and everything on there to reach his office. So I called the number. It goes straight to voicemail now.
Dawn, Paul is currently unavailable. Please leave a message after the tone. When you have finished, please hang up or press the pound key for more options.
And I'm like, if he did answer, what am I going to say? Hey, Paul, by the way, I heard you're trying to send us back into the Stone Ages and have women in hoods. Like really, what was I going to say to that, right? But this is essentially the man who is spearheading this initiative. Now, I want to get into some of these policies, some of these proposals. Now, this is a, 900-page book. So if I actually said I went through all of this, we would be on this podcast for 8 hours, right? So I just selected a few things, just a few that I thought were interesting. And some of the people who've contributed to writing Project 2025, as I said, Ben Carson, Acting Defense Secretary Chris Miller, Deputy White House Chief of Staff Rick Dearborn, Russ Vault, who, by the way, got caught on a hidden camera saying how all of this crazy, crazy stuff, right? And Ken Cuccinelli, Department of Homeland Security official. Like, it was some notable people on this, right? But as far as the policies are concerned, I just found it very interesting. So one that was proposed was reclassifying several thousand civil servant jobs. Okay, these are just standard government jobs, right? And moving them to Schedule F. This is the Schedule F plan, where a lot of these government jobs that are not politically appointed, like, you know, you appoint your chief of staff and, you know, things like that, right? These are like everyday people who just work in government. Well, instead of them, you know, having an HR department and being civil servants, they would be reclassified to Schedule F, whereas though they could be fired without cause, just because, hey, I don't like what you're doing, I just don't like it. You could be fired and replaced without due process or rights or HR and all of that good stuff, right? And that's wild. So instead of you being able to go to work and do your job and, you know, serve the interest of your country, if you aren't doing what the president likes, essentially you can be fired without any type of checks or balances or anything like that. Another thing, and we're just going to go down the line. A lot of people have talked about this, but eliminating the Department of Education. Now, give every parent a voucher-like option they could choose, and they could send their child to a private school, zero out federal funding to low-income schools over the next decade, and cut wasteful school meal programs and end Biden's student loan forgiveness program. Now, for some of this, right, being able to send your child to private school, that sounds like a great thing, right? Like, no parent is going to be mad at that. But then, when you look in the fine print, you're going to zero out funding to low-income schools. What if this kid can't get to that private school that's all the way out in the county? You're going to eliminate school meal programs. Okay, which is a direct contrast to what Tim Walz did with implementing school meal programs in Minnesota. So the babies can go to private school, but they're going to starve while they're in there. Essentially, that's what's going to happen. You can go to any private school of choice if you can get there, first of all, but you will starve if you don't have any money. Okay. They're going to deprioritize climate change. Okay? Roll back all of that environmental regulations, fracking, all that stuff. So you can basically send us to hell in a handbasket, have fumes, toxic fumes in the air, and all of that. But we got oil. We got energy. We got production. We're all dying a slow death, but hey, we got money. So that was another interesting thing. Now, with the healthcare piece, another plan, majorly cut and overhaul Medicaid, rolling back a new law that bans surprise medical billing. So you know how when you go to the doctor, and this is somebody, just for those of you listening out there, the cabinet members far and wide, I suffer from anxiety. I have anxiety attacks from time to time. And sometimes when you go to the hospital, they'll do all of this stuff on you, of course, just to make sure that you're healthy and you're not having any physical issues. But they'll throw stuff that's just totally unnecessary in there and charge you for it, and you'll get that surprise billing. Project 2025, they're like, look, the hospital can surprise bill you. If you didn't need that x-ray, if you didn't need that CAT scan, niece, we don't care. Put it on the bill. That's essentially what's that saying. Another thing which was interesting on immigration was denying loan access to students at schools that provide in-state tuition to illegal aliens, banning non-citizens from living in federally assisted housing, even if they are married or living with a citizen or they together, reinstate and expand the horseback-mounted border patrol. Now, part of me, and those of you who have followed the show, part of me doesn't look at this policy as totally bad, right? Because if you're an illegal alien, why are you living in federal housing? It, like, that part of it, like, makes sense to me. I know everybody's not going to agree. I think that people should be treated a certain kind of way when they do come here with humility and civility and respect. But why are you living in taxpayer-funded housing if you're not a legal citizen of the country? That's a good question, right? So I'm not saying that they would go about it in the best way, but on paper in theory, I'm not totally outraged by that, right? Now, one thing, because we're gonna get into these reproductive rights, because that's been a hot topic. Now, one thing that really shocked me, it really shocked me when I read this, okay? So, Heritage Foundation president Kevin Roberts calls for banning of porn. Banning of porn. Now, for those of you who are listening who live in certain southern states, you already know when you go on certain porn websites that you got to put in information, you got to be verified. Some sites are blocked. Like, I've seen it. I've been in Texas. I've been in some of these states, and I have experienced it myself. Hey, it is what it is. But he's basically saying that pornography, and this is, and I quote from the project, pornography should be outlawed. The people who produce and distribute it should be in prison. Educators and public librarians who purvey it should be classified as registered sex offenders. And telecommunications and technology firms that facilitate its spread should be shuttered. So, baby, not only are you going to be under duress, but you're not going to have a release. So it won't be no relax, relate, release. Pornhub, X-Videos, OnlyFans, Just for Fans, all my fans, y'all all going to be gone. Okay? If this goes into effect, y'all are going to be gone. So no more late nights by the fireplace for you. Okay? Wow. And you know, here's the thing. I have friends who work in sex work. They do sex work. And what I find interesting about them wanting to ban porn is that two of my friends specifically, because I have friends from all walks of life, I don't believe in shaming anybody, are escorts. And, you know, they're gay escorts. They're LGBTQIA. And one thing that stuck out to me, he said, DDM, I made a lot of money at the Republican National Convention. I said, why? He's like, yeah. Like, I make a lot of money at these conventions. I said, really? He's like, yeah, you'd be surprised who some of my clients are. And of course, he wouldn't name names, and I wouldn't do it on the show anyway because I don't want to get sued. But I was just baffled. So I'm like, you have a political body who, behind closed doors in the dark, is actively participating and engaging in sex work, but you want to ban porn. Like, this is, like, crazy, right? Now, on the issue of reproductive rights, because that's been a hot topic, they want to revoke FDA approval of the abortion pill Mifepristone, I may be butchering the name, which is used in about half of U.S. abortions, saying in the document, abortion pills pose the single greatest threat to unborn children in a post-Roe world. They want to use an old law, the Comstock Act, to prosecute people who send abortion pills through the mail. So if you're one of those nice old ladies down in the South that's mailing abortion pills or in wherever it is that you live, you're going to jail, niece. Ending the mandate for insurance to cover the week after contraceptive pill, Ella. Okay? So even if y'all do to do that morning after pill, insurance ain't covering that, niece. Okay? Also, too, they want to fix abortion, what's called abortion tourism, in liberal states. They want to require states to report where women seeking abortions live and cutting federal funds if they refuse. And this is, once again, this is just some of the proposed policies from Project 2025. Just some. Once again, if we actually sat and read this whole document on air, we would be here for an entire work shift. But it's something to be, in my opinion, alarmed by. Donald Trump has distanced himself from this a lot. But these are people that were working for you, Donald. So it's very interesting to see how this plays out. Now, what is the likelihood of a lot of this stuff happening if Trump should get into office? In my opinion, it's high probability. I don't think all of it per se, but a lot of this stuff based on previous behaviors, current behaviors, seems highly likely. So you have to kind of do with this information what you will and decide what works best for you. And that's all we really can do. It is interesting, I'm going to tell you, living in a time where these are even possibilities. And I say this a lot, that there has to be balance. I'm a firm believer that nothing should ever be too far right, but also nothing should ever be too far left. There should always be a nice even center. There should be a balance in the force. Too much red, too much green, and you create a catastrophe. But this is an example of extreme conservative policy. And I think that is something to be concerned about and that we have to take into account moving forward. So that's essentially Project 2025, how it came to be, who's in charge of it, who's running it. And now it's up to you to decide where we go from here. Once again, thank you for tuning in. Don't forget to subscribe on our YouTube channel, youtube.com/Secretary of Shade. Make sure you tune in every other week here on WYPR for the audio podcast. My name is DDM. You can follow me online at Dapper Dan Midas. You all have a great week, and I will see you soon.